G'day and welcome to Oceanic Gaming Radio, your one-stop shop for all things gaming and or radio. My name's El Capitano Perth, Captain Perth, El Capo, and I'm joined here with my good friend Grizzly Gaming 86. How are you, friend?
Oh, pretty good, Cap. Not bad, mate. Easter time, things have been pretty good. Had my fair share of chocolate this weekend, mate. What about yourself? How are you going?
Yeah, I'm doing great, mate. Same thing. You know, there was no, actually, that Mia didn't buy me any chocolate this
yeah, dude, me too. But I actually asked for Loz not to buy me any chocolate this time around.
Oh, really?
She's like, do you want, because I'm not big on chocolate anyway, but she was kind of like, do you want an egg this year? And I was like, nah, like, I honestly don't need it. Like, and I probably wouldn't even fucking eat it. I don't know, man.
I do like a bit of chocolate. There's something about chocolate eggs that they're different to chocolate from a bar or something. Like, they just somehow, I'm sure they're exactly the same chocolate, but there's something different. I don't know what it is.
Mini Cadbury chocolate eggs. Oh, dude.
Yeah, absolutely,
so
dude.
Freaking good. Absolutely. Man. So good.
Yeah, see,
tell me about your Easter weekend, Capo. What'd you get up to, mate? What happened?
We did a fair bit, actually. So basically the week leading up to Easter was quite full on. We pretty much had something on every night up until Friday. And so I think like Thursday night we caught up with Mia's maid of honour, who we hadn't seen in a while because of COVID. Wednesday we caught up with some people. Tuesday, we caught up at her mum and dad's place.
Just socialites, mate. Look at you go.
Oh, dude, I'm fucking sick of it. and then...
just want to play this new PC. God dang.
Just want to fucking sit on my new PC and fucking game, bro. Yeah. But then Friday night, we had a big night at my good friend's house, and he put on like a big barbecue with like... And he did like a whole day smoked brisket and like butterfly chicken and all this other stuff. It was unbelievable. Mia made like an epic mac and cheese. And then Saturday was pretty much a cruisy day, nothing on. We actually went and saw the new fucking Fantastic Beasts movie, which is not bad. It's not too bad.
Yeah, I actually quite enjoy those, man.
Yeah.
No, they're not bad. They're in the Harry Potter world, aren't they?
They are in the Harry Potter world, mate. So, so beware if you're boycotting old mate fucking Rowling. Yeah, but it was pretty good. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't the greatest movie of all time, but it was just, you know, just a bit of fun, a bit of fucking magical fun. And then Sunday we went to Mia's mum and dad's for lunch. My mum and dad came around and we had a couple of bottles of red and ate some food. And then I came home and played Dota with you and ate Easter eggs.
Did you have an Easter egg hunt, Cap? Did you miss
out
on
the Easter egg hunt? No, and this is the thing. Normally we do, and then Mia was like, fuck you, Liam. You never do it for me, so I'm not doing it for you this year as a protest. And I was like, well, that's fair.
How sick would be an Easter hunt for adults where they hide, like, beers and little bottles of spirit and stuff?
Yes.
And, like, fucking protein shakes.
I didn't know where you're going to go with the adult thing. I was like, what are we hiding here, Chris, in the bush? So what about you, Chris? Give me a laydown of
I've had a very big weekend as well. So obviously my wife works in real estate. She sells kind of in our suburbs, but every year, man, it's awesome, dude. She puts on an event, her company put an event for the public, two Easter events where they basically do, they spend literally thousands of dollars on Easter eggs. So I think we end up with about 40,000 eggs, and they basically hold it at a big oval, and they go and spread all the eggs out, and they have different age groups. And over the two events, they had over 1,000 attendees. But it's really cool, man, because the two particular suburbs that we're in are reasonably low socioeconomic. So there's a lot of families and stuff that come along that probably wouldn't have Easter and chocolate and Easter eggs and stuff. So
man.
It's pretty cool. But dude, every year I get dressed up as the Easter Bunny, like
get
kitted up in this fairy suit, and just like run around and be an idiot. And yeah, kids love it, man. And it's, dude, it's so crazy. Like, I don't know what it is, but as soon as you get in like a suit, like whether it's a big teddy bear or whatever it is, kids are like in awe. They actually think you're something special.
Yeah.
So man, I got like fan mail this year. I've done it 3 years in a row, but like these little kids are writing, I love you, Easter Bunny, and like, and thank you so much for my chocolate and little drawings and things.
Yeah, that is
like,
super cute. Cool, and now that you're going to the gym so much, mate, I imagine like you'd be the Easter buff bunny.
Yeah, the old, well, yeah, it was all hidden under the suit, mate. But it, fuck, dude, it was hot. It's so hot, yeah, man.
I can imagine.
Oh, just ridiculous.
Even though, like, this is probably my favorite time of year because it's not too hot, not too cold. It's like the Goldilocks temperature, you know? Mm. So, like, you'll be out in the sun and you get a nice kind of, like, you know, you get the sun on you and it feels good. And then you get the nice cool breeze coming through and it's fairly, it's getting close towards, you know, needing the heater on, but not quite there yet. It's just, like, in my opinion, the perfect temperature. But I can still imagine being in a, in a bunny suit, that would have been pretty full on.
It was full on, mate. But then that night, Cap, I had a gig with the band, which was pretty cool. And it was a private gig, and they're always quite interesting. They're either hit or miss. This one, I would go with it was a miss. Like, people either rarely fucking get into it. But this was bizarre, dude. Like, I've got nothing against people that like to smoke marijuana or do the odd party drug or whatever, but this was another fucking level. This is a 40th party and they had bowls of like just drugs on the table.
Dude, that is nuts.
Yes, it was like,
how the fuck do people afford this shit? How do you have bowls of drugs?
Bowls of drugs.
I had to fucking save up for months to buy this fucking computer, let alone fucking buy a bowl of fucking, I don't know, pills or whatever. I don't know what shit costs these days.
It was fucking, dude, it was weird assortment of drugs. There was mushrooms and there was like, just like weird, different splices of stuff. So yeah, we played our 3 hour set and got out of there that night because it was getting a little bit hairy towards the end. So that was an interesting Saturday night. And
What was your set like? What kind of songs were you playing? Maybe you needed to put a bit more fucking Darude Sandstorm in there.
Dude, we actually ended with Killing in the Name of. and that was absolutely fucking pumping. People were just like, just off chops.
Oh, dude, that's so fucking funny. Sure. No. Oh man,
you can never tell, dude. You can never tell these private gigs. Like they can be the most mild people in the world, and you know, just kind of like clapping away when you finish a song, or it can go completely the other direction. So,
I can imagine. It's just like playing gigs in a pub or whatever. You know, you never really know what kind of clientele you're going to be dealing with. How did you guys get the gig? Was it just like word of mouth kind of thing, or?
Yeah, and a lot of those are. So we don't do any advertising, man. So it's usually friends of friends. Oh, my brother-in-law's got a 40th birthday party. You guys want to come and play some songs? It's like, yeah, whatever. As long as we get paid, we're going to go do it and have a bit of fun. Yeah. So
that's awesome, dude. Fuck yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't really think of anything else that I've really been doing over the past week. Oh, I had work training on all last week, so I haven't been in the office recently. So back into the office this week. Back to reality, Lego's gravity. So
there you go, mate. Back so into it.
But, happy days. Anyways, Grizzo, let's fucking get stuck into it, I reckon. I reckon that's what we should do. But first, before we do, I would like
I was about to remind you, yes.
I want to thank our ongoing Patreons. We got a bunch of new Patreons last week who are helping to support this podcast. Just want to thank Sukai, who's been our first and ongoing Patreon.
Day one, baby.
The blindsided Moose, our good mate, old Moosinator. Ho and Honey as well, your bloody legend. And our good friend fucking Big Bogues. What a fucking bunch of legends. Yep. Bloody appreciate you. So if you guys want to support the podcast, you can do so by going and checking out our Patreon. For a link to that, either check out our socials or just go onto Patreon and search Oceanic Gaming Radio. And then drop some fucking spondoolies on here so we can keep doing our thing. So there you go. Anyways, moving along. Grisso, Breath of the Wild 2, what do you reckon? You're a fan? You like the old one?
Yeah, dude, it looks fucking great.
New one?
Looks great. The new one looks great.
Yeah.
And I think what you were hinting at with this particular one is it looking a bit too great?
Yes. Well, this is the thing, mate. So I'm reading this IGN article and it says some tech experts are theorizing. It's like, mate, these are probably just fucking some fucking games journalists who have no fucking idea what they're talking about. I'm sure they have a bit of an idea, but like they're like, so basically the idea is there's some theories coming out that people are speculating that Breath of the Wild 2, the graphics that have kind of been shown in the most recent trailer are probably a little bit too good for the current tech that is with the Switch, which, I mean, that could entirely be true. Absolutely could entirely be true. But the thing is, one thing I will say is a lot of these companies have internal research and development where they develop graphical shit all the fucking time, and they manage to find ways to do things on a lower tech budget. So I think ultimately for me, I don't really fucking know, but the theory and the speculation is currently that maybe this new Breath of the Wild game, which has been delayed till next year, as of a month ago or something like that, we did cover it in an earlier podcast, might be actually being developed explicitly for a new Switch console Nintendo console. What do you think, Grizzo?
Just to paint the picture here. So the things that they're picking up in the particular footage and stuff we've seen is that the image quality is sharper and clearer, is that a word? More clear?
Yeah,
than, clearer. Looking more than 30 frames per second as well.
Definitely won't fucking get that on the Switch, mate.
You know, apparently, Switch doesn't use volumetric clouds. And there's some footage that you see of the Breath of the Wild 2 thing where he's fucking jet-setting through the clouds. So there's a couple of things here. Cap, would they have capacity to, like, post-render some game stuff?
Absolutely, and developers do that shit all the time.
Yeah.
Before they release shit. I mean, they literally did that with Breath of the Wild 1. They, like, cranked the draw distance up huge. And then, like, what you can see in Breath of the Wild 1 on the Switch is nowhere near what they were showing.
Well, could you imagine them releasing a clip that, and it's like, and frame drops and stuff? They would never do that. They're going to be releasing something that's going to look
Yeah, they're not going to make it look like shit.
I will say this, though, Cap. We've talked about this before on this podcast, that both you and I agree that the Switch, obviously released a long time ago, 2017, is outdated tech.
Oh, of course. But I tell you what, though, Grizz, like that jump between old and new tech is getting like quicker and quicker all the time. You know, like look at like the PS2, like that had like a shelf life of like a billion years. And that just doesn't happen these days anymore, because like the new technology coming out is just like, there's a theory or some shit about how technology like kind of exponentially grows. I mean, obviously game consoles are not, absent from that particular,
it's theorem. Such an interesting thing, dude, because all of these developers, mobile phones, gaming consoles, everything, PCs, I'm sure they just hold stuff in the back pocket to slowly release it. Imagine if they just released the greatest thing that they've got right there. They're just losing money by not staggering.
Of course, exactly right. I mean, you got to like be breadcrumbing people to come into your games. Like,
So, Cap, the real question here, is the Switch outdated now? Is it actually hindering game devs and stuff?
I think it definitely is. I think the problem is that a lot of people, a lot of devs can't really target the Switch for a suite of games, especially next-gen games, easily. You know, like if you play The Witcher 3 on the Switch, you are going to be severely disappointed. I'm telling you right now. It runs like fucking shit. And people will tell you otherwise, but I'm telling you, it looks fucking garbo. When I loaded that up on my Switch, my brother had a copy of the Witcher 3 on it, and it was like fucking Polygon City, baby. Like, it just looked garbo. So, look, I don't know. I think they need to probably do a bit of a an upsell on the old Switch, maybe do a Switch Pro or something like that. But the problem is, like, I think it's going to be very difficult for Nintendo to do that, because Nintendo's market is so different to a lot of the other consoles. Like they're very heavily entrenched in like the kind of family console kind of market. And so I think it's going to be very difficult for Nintendo to adequately market a new console and also have it kind of in its own little ecosystem of the Switch. I think they're very happy with the Switch right now because they're still releasing games for it. People are still buying shit. The Nintendo titles still fucking amazingly on that console. But I mean, there's no real drive for them to really need to do anything. I mean, why would they? They're still selling fucking copies.
I think the only way they could do it, Cap, is releasing a Switch Pro that there is no difference between the games you can play on a standard Switch and a Switch Pro, but the Switch Pro might just have slightly better performance for some particular games. That way they're not fucking themselves with having games that are just releasing on the Switch Pro and it being really separate from the success that they're leveraging off the original Switch, which I don't know, man. Like, I mean, you have a look. So, Cap, I've got a table here of the most sold consoles, and I don't know if you've seen this, but if you look at where the Switch is for its release date, it is remarkable. So the Switch is sitting at 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth most sold console ever at 103.5 million consoles sold, released in 2017. Number one is the PlayStation 2 that was released in the year 2000, with only 40 million copies of that sold above the Switch. So, dude, it's nuts.
Yeah, I think very
popular.
You know, I think like Nintendo's lucky to have kind of the best of both worlds market-wise, because, you know, they could keep the Switch going for a little bit longer. I vaguely remember hearing one of the devs say that the Switch is about halfway through its life cycle. So, I mean,
is that right, dude?
Yeah. Really? So, I mean, they probably got another 4 or 5 years left of the current gen Switch. So, I mean, what do they do? Do they release a Switch Pro? And then in a few years' time, they release another console. It's kind of difficult. It all depends internally where they're at with like their. Maybe they wanted to do that earlier, but like the whole like silicon shortage just fucked them royally. Like, there's so many things that could have potentially happened that really hindered their business processes. Like, I mean, look what's happened to the PS5, dude. People still can't get a fucking PS5.
Yeah,
it's insane. In some countries, it's way worse. Like, we've been okay here in Australia, but like overseas, like in the US and stuff, it's been very difficult. But yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean,
so what is your take on this, Cap? We obviously haven't. Do you think that this is designed for a new Nintendo?
Dude, if I had to put money on it right now, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I think it's designed for the Switch. They'll just dial everything fucking back for when they release it. That what they're doing is they're just, dude, I mean, you got to remember that these companies have share prices, right? The better they make shit look, the higher sentiment there is behind these things. And up goes the share price, baby. Doesn't matter if like when it releases it's slightly shit. They know that they're going to sell fucking shitloads of copies. They don't give a fuck. Obviously they want to do a good job of the game itself, but if they've got to dial back the graphics, like that's such a fucking minor inconvenience to them. It means nothing.
So follow-up question, Cap, are you worried about Breath of the Wild 2 coming out on not worried about them dialing back the graphics and you're not seeing this volume?
Not at all, man. Breath of the Wild 1 looks sweet. And I would argue that like Breath of the Wild 1 came out at the beginning of the Switch's life cycle, right? They now have 5 years worth of data and knowledge on how to develop games specifically for that console. They're going to nail it, dude. Like, it'll look great.
I'll tell you what, dude.
It'll look better than Breath of the Wild 1. I'll tell you that much.
There's a lot to be said for game optimization as well.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, you see some of these new releases coming out, and I'll just talk about Elden Ring, for example. Beautifully, well, I think quite beautifully optimized for PlayStation 5, ran great, no problems for me. Chuck it on PC and you've got frame rate issues and everything else. So like you say, if they're using the same engine and what they've learned from Breath of the Wild 1 and applying that to Breath of the Wild 2, then maybe they could even fix like what were you saying, dude, about entering into fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, the first time I entered into the forest where you pick up the Master Sword, it was just like the whole game had been great up until that point. And then all of a sudden, the frame rate just was chugging and, like, the video was playing. It was just, like, it looked like garbo. It was, like, honestly, it would have had to be, like, 10 frames per second in there. I think they've done some optimizations since, but, God, it was shit at the time.
So I'm sure there's some learnings to that kind of stuff. And maybe they patched that in post and everything else. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm very much with you, Kat. I think my take on this is that maybe this – I think if they were – I definitely don't think they're going to be releasing a new console, not right now, especially after you've said that they believe they've got 5 more years in the tank for the Switch. I wouldn't be surprised to see a Switch Pro, but I think a genuine rule set that I think would come into play there is they have the ability to play – any Switch title across the two, but you might get some maybe better battery performance, maybe well, we get the OLED screen, but maybe slightly higher frame, more stable frame rates. But no, not shoehorning specific games for release on that Switch Pro console.
No.
It's almost similar to the way the PlayStation 4 Pro kind of was as well.
Yeah, well,
in that respect,
that's a good point. Because, I mean, one thing to remember as well, interestingly, is that Breath of the Wild 1 came out as they were transitioning consoles. So you could get Breath of the Wild on the Wii U.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so...
Can you still get that on the Wii U or not? Is that...
Well, I assume... I'm pretty sure that's correct. Can someone fucking fact check me on that? I feel like... I'm pretty sure that's the case, but maybe I'm talking shit, but I swear it was on Wii U. It would be interesting to play that on the Wii U, actually, if that the case.
You can. Graphical comparison, Wii U and Switch. There you go.
See, I talk in a sheet. So,
Breath of the Wild. Formally announced until Wii U 2013.
Yeah, see, there it is. So I think that's another thing why a few people have been like, maybe there is a new console coming out. Maybe they delayed it because they wanted to announce it with the new console. And they'll release a Switch version and a Switch 2 version. I just can't see it happening. Again, the biggest issue, probably the bigger issue here is the silicon shortage. I just cannot see Nintendo being able to accurately get enough consoles out into the wider world. I don't know. I just can't see it fucking happening. But this stuff about volumetric clouds and all this other shit, Grizz, like, so the thing is, like,
talking shit, mate, or what?
Yeah, I mean, look, these games are developed on like switches essentially, and they're not in exactly a Switch or anything. They'd be like, it's almost like a computer, and you can still dial that shit up and make it look really good. And I mean, all these projects would be playable on their own infrastructure or architecture and shit. So, like, I don't know. I understand why people are getting excited about this, but use your fucking logic. Sometimes I feel like people just make stories up like this just because they can.
Well, dude, Breath of the Wild shocked a lot of people with how well it ran and the engine that sat behind it. And you know, being able to see stuff off in the distance and being able to physically walk up and climb up and that kind of thing was pretty good. When you look at the specs that sit behind the Switch, so
absolutely, it's going to be very. We're going to
be up in the clouds on this one, Cap. So I wonder if that fixes some of it—that you're actually not rendering some of the bits and pieces, allowing more detail in there. I don't know.
It will depend. Like, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, a lot of the time, Grizz, like, devs will be smart and they'll use like game, in-game kind of mechanics and stuff that kind of complement the fact that it's helping the devs out a little bit. Like, if you think about things like Skyward Sword, for example, some of it takes place above the clouds, some of it takes place below the clouds, but like there's a clear area between them and you've got a load in between them. So it's not like one consistent area. So that obviously would have made that a lot easier than having one open world kind of game because, you know, you're not having this massive fucking area that you're flying around in and trying to load all that. But I mean, they're probably going to have that issue with this game. It'll be interesting to see how that verticality is kind of, expressed in this new game and exactly how they go about you traversing it. Will those volumetric clouds, will they be used to sort of like hide what you see behind the clouds and then therefore de-render that, making more making it easier for the Switch to render everything that you can see, for example.
That's the classic classic example is looking at the Dark Souls games with the fog of war gates between the bosses, you know. Originally designed to, so I don't know if you noticed, man, but Dark Souls 3, when you get into the Firelink Shrine, a lot of those areas when you're trying to go out to where the tree is, there's that tree skip and stuff out there. There's a big fog of war there
that you can't go through. Loading.
You can't go through it,
until it's fully loaded,
You can be pretty clever with little bits and pieces like that, and you know. And when you're in the boss room, obviously, it's usually just you and the boss, and that's the only area that's rendered. Maximizes the frame rate and everything else. Make sure it's stable, so you haven't got a wider world around you. But yeah, like you say, pretty clever with those little design mechanics to ensure that it's optimized nicely.
Yeah. So I think overall, Grizzo, I can't see it happening. Hey, stranger things have happened, maybe. But I think economically, and the way the world is at the moment, I'd be very fucking surprised to see another Switch.
I feel like we see this kind of stuff coming out, Cap, as people kind of using their leverage to try to get clicks on articles, mate. That's all I see this as.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and again, we've seen plenty of games come out in the past that and the trailers look way fucking better than what the game looks like when it releases. Mm. Yeah, it's just, that's just how it is. But yeah,
new Switch console announced.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, moving along, Grizzo. A bit of a report from Kotaku. Seems like there's been a Business Insider report that Xbox is investigating having adverts within its free-to-play games. Now, I'm not too sure what games would qualify for that. I would think maybe stuff like Forza. I don't think that is free-to-play, but I guess games like that. But I mean, yeah, look, just to give you guys a bit of an idea of what's going down here, a new report claims that Microsoft is building an advertising program to give select brands, in quotations, the ability to buy ads that will then appear in Xbox free-to-play games. And while the report says Xbox and Microsoft are being careful not to irate players or disrupt games, it's unlikely most folks will enjoy seeing in-game ads. And it's actually one thing that I think Microsoft's going to have to do a really good job of if they do plan to do this, is to tread very carefully, because like people will drop them like it's hot if they have shit like this going on, and it's a bit annoying.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this coalesces, I guess, within games. You know, I'd imagine a game like Forza, you know, you'd be driving around, brum, brum, and then, like, you go around a turn and there's a fucking billboard there with, you know, fucking, I don't know, fucking Gillette or some shit on it.
Yeah,
and I mean, the interesting thing is, Grizz, like, it depends on how weird they go with it, because if you do it, like, if they did it through Game Pass, theoretically you'd probably have your Microsoft account attached to your Xbox Game Pass, and then they might be able to load up certain ads that interest you.
Everyone might have a different ad that's on the billboard.
Right, this is the thing. How deep does the rabbit hole go, Grizzly?
So my take on this, Cap, is that all games, regardless of whether they're free to play or paid, need some kind of monetization model, whether it's a one-time payment, loot boxes, ongoing subscriptions, cosmetics, whatever it might be. So this is no real surprise. In terms of me personally, the idea of advertisement, as long as they're non-invasive, I don't think that is a bad thing for us if it's done in the correct way. So
yeah,
I think it's a good way to do it. Like you say, if it was like a billboard and you see Coca-Cola on it or something, doesn't impact on your gameplay at all. But if you've got a pop-up that's popping up on your screen, you've got an exit out or something like those mobile games, then it would be invasive and not nice. But yeah, dude, I actually don't mind this. Like when I look at monetization models that I don't like, Cap, so loot boxes, I'm neither here or there. Like it's okay as long as they're not pay to win.
Yeah.
Pay to win monetizations where you're paying for some kind of currency that allows you to get better in game, absolutely not. That's the really not way to go. Hats, so the way that Dota 2, Team Fortress, and all those other free-to-play games that have, you can buy yourself a nice skin. Yeah. I like that. But I think, dude, I think this could be quite good. Imagine if they had, on your Facebook, and you, well, I don't know what ones you get on yours, Cap, but I get heaps of those. I get heaps of those that was wish ones, for lots of sound gear and drum kits.
Oh,
and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine like you're playing Fortnite. You're like, oh, there's that sick drum kit I was Googling yesterday.
It could
be interesting, man.
I actually don't mind targeted ads because it's generally for shit that I want. Or I've been researching, you know, so like at the moment I've got a shitload of targeted ads for sit stand desks and stuff, which I mean, I've already made my purchase, but it kind of helped me a little bit because, I found a few like discount codes for certain like providers and stuff of those particular, items. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see exactly again how those ads coalesce into games. Like, I mean, if I'm playing fucking Halo 3 and I have a fucking ad break in the middle of a fucking cutscene, and it's like, hey, are you feeling hungry? It's like, no, I just want to fucking watch my movie, dude. Fuck off.
Well, dude, the loading screens, I could imagine that being real hot real estate.
Actually, that's a very good one as well. Mm. And then, you know, if you're doing that kind of stuff, Grizz, like, what if you're putting ads in loading screens, like what promotes developers to optimize their games to lower fucking loading times, you know, because they're going to want to increase that. Like,
so, I don't know if you heard about this, dude, but I'm sure you have. But the Horizon, the new Horizon game on the PlayStation 5, obviously is so fast between loading the zones that they used to classically have in the previous Horizon game have hints and tips in those loading screens. But because it was so quick, there was actually no need to have hints and tips. Yep. So there was a setting in the menu where you could have the option to see hints and tips, and you can basically click X and click through them, or it just loads you straight into the next zone because it's literally that quick. So why have something flash out? So, dude, you're totally right. Like, the way that we are now with SSDs and the way that our PCs and consoles are loading zones, and even like the way that the developers are having smarts to kind of write the code for different bits and pieces. Like, if you're walking down a long hallway, you might be loading the next zone as just by walking down there. I don't know, man. Maybe there's no real estate in that fact. But I wanted to talk about, dude, like, obviously I've got three young children, and how awful advertising is on mobile phone applications, to the point of where they just have these pop-ups with an ad. And like, my kids have spent hundreds of dollars by accident on me and my wife's Apple accounts through clicking through advertising and, you know, accidentally getting to the pay bit and billing it on. It can be real. And I'm sure that that's the way that they've designed that to be, to do that.
For sure,
dude. In these kids' games, and it can go really wrong in the wrong hands, for sure.
Well, I mean, a lot of the advertising is kind of nefarious. Like, I mean, you look at things like phishing emails that you get at work and stuff like that. A lot of ads like use a lot of similar kind of shit, you know, like, I mean, some of them are probably a bit more hackery kind of aligned. Like, you see the pop-up, they're like, hey, you've got three new viruses on your phone. And it's like inside an ad pop-up. You're like, that looks a bit dodgy. but then like, some people kind of do similar-esque kind of shit with their adverts, so that you accidentally click on it, and then you go to their stupid fucking website, and then you're like, what am I doing here? And I mean, obviously kids have no like internet hygiene at all. Like, you know, they have no fucking idea, let alone like old people or anything else, you know, people who don't really kind of, I mean, you know, get around kind of security hygiene, your own personal security hygiene. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they do things. I think Microsoft will be a little bit more, what's the word? I mean, you know, giants like Google and stuff find it very difficult to screen their ads because it's like a self-service thing, and like, they're, because so many people want to use Google ads, they obviously can't go through every single like ad hand by hand. They use sort of AI and all these other shit to try and figure out if an ad is, you know, bullshit or not. I would think Microsoft will probably, I mean, these guys literally say that they're going to be working with select brands. So they're obviously going to be selective about what they're doing. It'll be interesting. Obviously, in addition to that, it says Microsoft is apparently very concerned about angering gamers who normally don't expect to encounter ads in console games. So this can work out pretty bad,
Cap, too, once you start monetizing your games incorrectly. I mean, look back at that huge outright. Was it Ubisoft or something with that Star Wars game that was like incredibly bad? Lots of pay to win mechanics, unlocking classes and bits and pieces, sitting behind paywalls and
was
stuff.
Was that like Battlefront?
Yeah, that's the one. The release of Battlefront. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah. Now, yeah, I think it was Battlefront 2. I think Pav's right. He's given us the two fingers. Frontwards, not backwards.
I guess I'm not worried, Cap, about the fact that Microsoft, obviously, you know, they're going to want to be doing the right thing in terms of giving the user experience. But if this becomes the normal thing, mate, where we're starting to see advertisement in our PC games, etc., there's absolutely no reason why we're not going to see those devs down the road try to take an indie game, throwing millions of dollars at them to try to put some kind of branding throughout or something else. Maybe this is just the tip of the iceberg that we'll see in terms of this.
It's
marketing in video games. Imagine being Hollow Knight, mate, and someone like fucking Pepsi comes up to you and goes, mate, I will give you $20 million to a Pepsi sign in this little part
dude,
of the game.
And don't fucking tell me you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Of course you fucking would, dude. If someone came up and said, like, I'll give you a couple of mil just to go and, like, chuck some shit in your game, you'd be like, fuck yeah, dude, that's what I'm doing this shit for. I'm trying to get paid. But I mean, yeah, even think about something like Among Us, you know, like that went, you know, super viral. Imagine all the computer fucking screens on Among Us having like a little logo or something on them, like a Macca's logo or some shit. I don't know. I'm just fucking brainstorming here. I don't want to give Macca's too many fucking ideas here, but
dude, advertising so works too, though. Imagine being
playing
Among Us and seeing a Big Mac pop up on the Among Us screen. Like, you'd probably just go,
And then you get an Uber Eats thing. You're like, I could fucking do that right now. And I've done that before. But yeah, there you go. All right, well, moving along, Chrisso. A bit of new content from No Man's Sky. Now, to begin, it looks like Sean Murray, who is the co-founder of Hello Games, who created and published and developed No Man's Sky, has noted that they've got another project in the works. He said, for a while now, we've been working on something pretty ambitious in the background. It's a small team, but we like it that way. He said, in addition, similar to No Man's Sky, it's the kind of project that even if we had 1,000 people working on it, it'd still seem impossible. So, look, a lot of people are sort of saying, oh, well, classic Sean Murray. I remember what happened when he announced fucking No Man's Sky and then No Man's Sky released and everyone shut the bed because it was nowhere near what they said it was going to be like. I will say that they have thoroughly redeemed themselves in recent years with content updates to that game. Yeah, ultimately, it says the project's still in very early development. So I would assume that that means they've got a rough idea, and they've probably done some very, very basic brainstorming and maybe some very, very early art direction stuff. He's also going on to say that they've apparently learnt their lesson on talking about games too early from No Man's Sky's pre-release period. So interesting, Grizzo. Be interesting
to see what they do. I love to see this, Cap, hey? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with the history with No Man's Sky, you know, coming out, it went from a overwhelmingly negative on release to now, I believe, an overwhelmingly positive based on the recent reviews.
And I tell you what, man, like, Hello Games was a fledgling company when No Man's Sky first came out. So, you know, again, you know, as we talked about the Switch and, you know, Nintendo having had a fair few years under the belt with the Switch now, and that kind of experience. Hello Games is the same, you know, like they're a company now, they've got more experience under their belt. There's every chance that whatever they create next could be very, very fucking good. I mean, it could be very shit as well, but I mean, that's the same for anyone. It all depends on a lot of factors. They know how to support a game, and we've seen that. I'm sure that there was a lot of lessons there for them to learn from in the early development of No Man's Sky. I'm sure that they can make the next thing.
In terms of those original promises they made that sat behind No Man's Sky, Cap, I believe the majority, if not all of those, are now implemented in the current game. So the fact that in that article that you mentioned that, you know, they've learned from that initial release cycle and maybe some of the media that they brought out around that game, it's looking pretty good. If they can learn from that and either develop what they are promising from the word go or not be too forward in what they're releasing. I mean, one thing that's really impressive about Hello Games, Cap, is the fact that they have like continually released content for No Man's Sky.
Oh, dude.
For the one cost of that game. And then there is literal, when is it? 2017, man, was this game's release. And they're still, I've just had seen Bogues say in the chat there that they've just released another patch overhauling the ship combat. So
yeah, which is what we're going to chat about as well in combination to this. I mean, Outlaws, new content for No Man's Sky. So this obviously all came out together as kind of one big block of content once they sort of discussed that they had a new game coming out and said, hey, by the way, here's a bit of new No Man's Sky content, and they have said as well that there's no plans of stopping with this fucking game, which is fucking cool.
So, Cap, how are they making money from this, dude? Do they have like some kind of monetization? I would just think
ongoing sales. Also, dude, they must. Yeah. I reckon they made a shitload of money off it, regardless of the fact that it shit the bed. I think they did make a lot of money from their partnership with Sony initially when it released. And I think ongoing they've managed to make a lot of money on it. I mean, obviously we have no idea what those kind of figures are, but I mean, I don't know if we can find maybe a stat of how many copies they sold, but I mean, fuck, it would have to be a fair bloody bit. But yeah, I mean,
So just looking at another just really quickly comparing this to another developer, Cap, that developed a action RPG game called Walsen, which had it very similar to No Man's Sky, where they had huge hype on release in the action RPG space, but the game underdelivered, was buggy as fuck, and then they basically did nothing with the money they made from the initial release, and it's basically just sat there in a hole and kind of died slowly. Where it's someone like Hello Games. They've now built hype for their next developed game because they followed through and did the right thing by their initial community and spent the time to get No Man's Sky right. So, dude, I think there's has enough reason to be excited for this next one, even though they're saying it's an ambitious game. It's cool.
Dude, I tell you what. So I just did a bit of research. So one person here is saying, and this was 6 years ago, that No Man's Sky in digital sales alone made $78 million.
Oh my God.
For a small indie development team of fuck all people, dude, of course that game's going to be fucking continued development. And I mean, that's also like the fact that, you know, they have, in a lot of people's eyes, redeemed themselves with the recent content updates. So there's going to be a lot of people who buy into that game, you know, in the last 6 years, since that comment was made. You know, I can only imagine how much they've made since. That's just digital sales. That's not physical. So, you know, and they've also got the Switch version on the way as well.
So, Cap, do you know if they're using the same dev team for this new release, or are they?
Well, they are a single dev team, I believe. So, okay. That's the studio, Hello Games, of whom Sean Murray is associated with. So, looking at this new content that's on the way, Grizz, they've stated that it adds a new pirate underworld and overhauled space combat. And it looks like they've added some new fucking ships or something that have like these cool fins and shit.
Yeah. Did we even get into space in the end when we played this game?
I think we did, but we didn't go very far. We should fucking crack it again, dude. I reckon we should actually get in there and do a decent job of it. I reckon a couple of the dad bods might be interested.
Maybe we just put it on real easy because we got clapped last time.
It was kind of garbo. I'm sure there's ways that like you can make the game more difficult for yourself, but if anyone's listening at home and they got suggestions on how we can enhance our experience, let us know. Because when we did play it recently, we played it on hard, and I'm sure easy probably would still be too easy. But it would be nice to have something in between hard and easy. But we landed on this planet that was just like, you're just constantly dying from acid or some shit. And it was just like, well, this is shit. But I still want it to be difficult survival, you know what I mean? So if anyone's got any suggestions, fucking, I don't know, add us on Twitter or some shit.
We didn't want to water down the experience. We also don't want to be dying every 5 minutes from something that we don't know how to fix.
Well, yeah, exactly right. So, but yeah, so that looks really good. I'm just having a brief look at the shit that they've released over the last like few years, Grizzo, and like it's kind of fucking nuts. Like,
you're looking at the No Man's Sky.
Oh, dude, just the release page for these guys is just kind of out of control. Like all the different updates and stuff that they've had. I mean,
is there a way to see concurrent players on Steam for these games? I would love to know what the concurrent player, that like player base is for No Man's Sky.
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, here's a major release timeline, Grizz. 2016. Initial release, which was then followed by the Foundation update, followed by the Pathfinder update, then Atlas Rises, then they had the Exocraft rework, the Abyss Visions Beyond Synthesis Bytebeat. This is by 2019. Then they had Living Ship, Exomet, Crossplay, Desolation Origins, Halloween update, then the Next Gen update in 2020. 2021, they had Companions, Expeditions, Beachhead Expedition, Prisms, Frontiers, Cartographer's Expedition, Emergence Expedition. That was in 2021. And then this year, they've already had one piece of content released already, which was the Sentinel. They've also had another expedition release called the Exobiologies one. And now they've also had the Outlaws and Blighted Expedition released. And obviously, they're looking to release on Nintendo Switch in 2022.
This is insane, Cap, because any other game, these would be paid DLCs, I feel like.
That's what I mean, dude. Like, it's actually kind of nuts.
It's so crazy.
I mean, look, again, they have made a shitload of money. I mean, if that random comment I found on the internet is corroborated and true, and they did make about $78 million in digital sales way back when, 6 years ago, dude, they must be sitting on some serious cash. So they're just like, hey, we'll just keep paying our devs. We'll keep pumping out decent content, get decent sentiment from our players, and improve our face and make good on the promises we did, and then we can release another game. And you know, they've already got good marketing now, because you know, it's the people love redemption acts, dude. You know, people love exactly, to see dude. People fail and redeem themselves. That is a constant theme in media, and as soon as people start doing that shit, It's fucking hot.
So we need to fail this podcast and then come back even stronger, Kaz. Yeah. What you say? We need to fuck up.
Yeah.
Hey, Pav has posted the stream charts for me for No Man's Sky. Dude, like, okay, so the peak all time for this game, 212,000 active people playing it. As of the last 24-hour peak, there is still a player base of around 32,000 people playing it on Steam alone. That's quite a lot, man. I'd love to know what that is. I'd love to know what that is like in comparison to like some of the other reasonably successful releases. I know Elden Ring is holding ridiculous, like millions.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's always gonna be the case though. But I mean, even like for a game that's this old,
2017, dude. It's so interesting. So, Cap, when do you think the 212,000 people played?
Oh, dude, release, what? Surely.
Yeah, on release, right?
Yeah.
On release in August, by September, it had dropped to 9,000.
Dude, that is crazy.
212,000? Yeah.
Holy shit. I've just opened it up as well. You can see, obviously, when they've released new content and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's to be honest, I'm really glad that they've done a good job of the stuff post all this. And you know what, dude, I'm gonna fucking download it right fucking now.
Get it on.
No Man's Sky.
Yeah, look, man, if I had gig internet, I would too, but it would probably make this. It'd probably shit the bed.
But yeah, so I don't know, Chris. I'm looking forward to some new content. I when I saw this, I was like, I think I'm gonna give it a solid crack this time. And actually, you know, now that I've got the new PC, I can pump it on fucking Ultra Mega Mad Dog Edition.
I agree with you. Let's try to get the dad bods across. Maybe when they finish the Valheim,
we'll
convince them to come and play a little bit of No Man's Sky, I reckon. Yeah.
Dude, I've almost finished downloading it.
You're a prick. What do we get it on? What do we have it on, dude? Is it on Steam? What were we playing?
I've got it on Steam, I'm currently downloading at 110 megabytes per second.
Oh my God, dude.
But yeah, anyways, moving along, Grizzo. Guess what, mate? I finished Elden Ring.
Hey!
I finally got there. So my playthrough.
How many hours, mate?
Hours was 151. Yeah. So quite a few hours. I did absolutely everything I could find. With a little bit of help of Google here and there. Major.
We're probably going to get there, but I'm curious to know what ending you ended up having, because I remember that you were streaming your Discord to me, and I know that you did make your way towards one of the endings, that you did tell me you were going to go back and you were going to go through the door. What did you end up with, mate? What did you end up doing?
Okay, so, I mean, this is going to be fairly spoiler-heavy if you're listening at home, and if you're trying to avoid spoilers, I would highly recommend that you probably skip this part of the podcast and check out the timestamps in the description for when we finish this discussion. Basically, I had access to every single ending. You had the frenzy flame ending. Obviously,
that's the one I got, by the way, Cap. The frenzied flame ending is what,
I figured out how to remove my frenzied flame, because I went and became a flame man, and then I found out how to get rid of it, which was quite convoluted.
I did piece that together until you read that bit of lore in the item that you found in that area. yeah. around how to remove the frenzied flame. And I'd already gone into NG Plus, so I'd already fucked my first playthrough.
Yeah.
But
well, you didn't fuck it. You just got to. I thought the dude. I went back and once I finished, I went and did a YouTube of all the different endings. I thought that one was by far the fucking coolest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
absolutely, dude. Like,
it's pure chaos, isn't it?
Oh, it's dude, it's just absolute chaos. Yeah. And like, yeah, just like you look over the lands between and everything's on fire and just absolutely fucked. You're like, holy shit, what have I done?
Yeah.
But I went with the Rani ending. Basically, which I think, lore wise, I'm going to say is the true ending.
Is that right? Okay.
Well, do you know what? It's all conjecture, but I think that is the true ending in my eyes.
So, Cap, maybe before we dive too deep into this, now we have given a spoiler alert, it would be nice for you to do a very summarized version of the whole lore that sits behind the Elden Ring, mate.
Yeah.
Kind of where we're at.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know, how much of the lore do you think you know, Grizz? Like, do you think you have, like, fuck all? Like, don't have any idea?
Yeah, fuck all, mate. No, not really. No, I will say that I actually, to my surprise, did complete quite a lot of the NPC quests, you know? I think I missed a couple. I know that I fucked up the Rogier stuff, and I don't know if you hit that correctly either. I think there's a bit more that you can do in that bit. But yeah, I got all the way through Rani's stuff and I beat those bosses and bits and pieces, but I'm really bad at piecing the world together. I don't read the item descriptions and stuff like that. So I kind of probably missed a lot of things. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look, I'll kind of keep this fairly quick because, you could go into some serious fucking depths, on this, but so basically the whole entire, universe of the Elden Ring starts from the cosmos, right? And then there's these outer gods, that are alluded to within the game, and these guys are kind of like these presences in the cosmos and the outer universe, and they kind of want in on what's going on in the lands between for some particular reason. It's not really, I don't think there's a really good reason that I've found as to why they like the lands between and what's there. I have a speculation as to what it might be. But basically, they're trying to get in. And so there's one particular outer god called the Greater Will that sends a star into the lands between. And that star essentially coalesces the Erd Tree, as far as I understand. Now, there's already things happening in the lands between. There's a bunch of, like, the primordial dragons already live there. The fire giants live there. It seems like the people of Carrion already lived there as well. It looks like what are they called? The God Killers. What do you call those? The Apostles? Godskin Apostles. Oh,
yeah,
Godskins.
Yeah, Godskins.
They likely already live there as well. And so what happens is, you know, this Greater Will kind of fires the Elden Beast in this star, and it coalesces and hits what's called the Crucible or some shit, and probably an older tree that was already there, creates the Erd Tree, creates the Elden Rune. Now, the Greater Will wants to assert its will on the lands, and so the Greater Will then appoints its Marika as the goddess of the lands, essentially, by its own decree. So basically, Marika is of a race of people called the Newman, or a race of, you know, beings called the Newman. And she comes down into the lands between and becomes the goddess, and she goes and does all her bits and pieces. Now, what she does do is, so she starts to kind of battle it out with all these different kind of presences that are on the lands between. So she has a big battle with the fire giants, because they have the crucible that can burn the Erd Tree, and she doesn't want that. Neither does the Greater Will. And she has battles with basically everyone on the lands, and basically pulls it all into justice and fucking the Golden Order. And, you know, we're right and you're wrong. And so basically what she also does is she pulls the Rune of Death out of the Elden Ring, which effectively breaks the cycle of death And so now everyone, instead of dying, they kind of go back to the Erdtree and then revive. And that's why you can revive in the game.
Is that right?
But wow, essentially, that's kind of roughly that. The idea of it. So what then happens after that is Marika needs someone to go and fight all her battles for her. And so along comes Godfrey. And Godfrey is just this barbarian mad dog. And he comes along and fights all her battles for her and becomes her consort. And then they have three children, all of them starting with R, Radahn, Rykard, and Rani. Oh, no, hang on, sorry. No, that's wrong. No, that's Radagon. So they have Godwin, Morgo, and Mo, which are those last two are the guys with all the pawns and shield.
Dude, it makes so much sense because they look very similar.
Yeah, and if you remember, when you go to fight Godfrey, he's holding Morgo and he's like, oh, it's been a long time, Morgo, you know? And he's...
Dude, another lore tidbit, potentially spoilery as well. I believe each of those bosses has some kind of shackle or an item that you can use to chain them to the ground in those phases as well.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because Morgo and Mo are basically like, they're kind of castaways because they were born cursed. And so they're shackled underground in the sewers because they were the cursed beings and they weren't good enough for the Golden Order and they shouldn't be above ground.
Dang, man.
But yeah, so anyways, Godfrey runs around and goes and wins all these battles and whatever else. And then over time, Marika becomes kind of... she kind of thinks she's being used, or at least it seems that way, by the greater will. And so she's having kind of second thoughts about the greater will and all that kind of shit. So there's kind of these events that start to happen. So after that, Radagon starts to go and fight a few battles for her, particularly the one with the Carrion people and in Liurnia and against those of the Erdtree. So Radagon goes and fights there. Godfrey is essentially exiled because he loses his grace and all that kind of shit. And the reasoning behind that is a little bit iffy, but I kind of think Marika took it away on purpose because... So to give more context to this, Godfrey is banished essentially because he no longer is graceful and he's not the Elden Lord anymore. So Marika no longer has a husband. So he goes out into the lands and to go and make... you know, something of himself elsewhere. And it seems to be that you are either his offspring or a follower of Godfrey who also went and followed him out into those lands and are now tarnished along with him because you are tarnished because you have no grace anymore. And then the grace is kind of pushing you to go back to the lands between to heal it and fix it.
That's why you are. That's why you were deemed as the tarnished one. And there's
exactly
a few,
right.
Basically, everyone is the tarnished one. That you see.
Yeah. And so your idea is to go back and fix the Elden Ring, which is what Godfrey should be doing, but he's gone.
So now, Cap, if you fix the Elden Ring, does that mean that the rebirth cycle once you die is gone essentially? So people can
no, because the Rune of Death is still pulled out. So. I think
you
might, I'm not too sure what the other endings do, but maybe you do fix the cycle or something. But the whole thing is basically to do with the greater will, this outer god that doesn't actually exist within the game, but is like a presence on the whole thing. So it's trying to get you to start the cycle again, essentially. You might not start it the way it wants it. So other things that happened is Radagon pops up on the scene after Godfrey kind of goes on exile. He goes and fights the Carrions and then falls in love with the Carrion Queen. They have a bunch of children, Radahn, Rykard, and Rani. Okay. Mm-hmm. Over time, Marika needs another husband. And what happens is Radagon then goes and marries Marika. In doing so, all of their children with Renala become demigods. So moving along after that, it seems like Rani's not super stoked with what's kind of happened. And I think she's kind of in the similar boat as Marika and isn't too stoked with the greater will and all this other shit. Also because the Carrions are kind of already on the land, it's kind of suggested that maybe they want to go back to the good old days rather than going with the outer will and the Golden Order and that kind of shit.
Yeah.
So she steals the Rune of Death from Malekith, who was given possession of the Rune of Death. She steals a shard of it. She then gives the shard to assassins, who then go and kill one of Godfrey and Marika's sons, Godwin the Golden. In doing so, Marika then shatters the Elden Ring because she's apparently enraged, but it's suggested maybe she did it on purpose. Because then that kind of starts the whole kind of bullshit that happens after that. And then obviously you sort of come in to try and collect all these shattered Elden Ring parts and who have been collected by all these people in the world, basically. So, I mean, obviously you had Melania. Another thing. Radagon and Marika obviously had children as well, and they were Melania and Mikola. Now, those two demigod children, it just goes down the fucking rabbit hole, right? This is probably the big fucking one, right? Is that Radagon and Marika are the same person.
Oh.
Yes.
Shit. Okay.
So what happened is, it's not exactly well displayed in the game, but it seems like at some point, either Marika split into two parts, or Radagon was always another part of the same person. So because they married one another, they had two children, and those two children were cursed as well because they're the same person. That's just how the game goes. Anyways, Melania and Mikola are both cursed.
Radagon in the game only has like one arm and stuff, right? Like Radagon looks like half a fucking person in the game.
Yeah, but you know when you walk into the boss room and Marika is on, like, it's one person like held on the Elden Ring. That's Marika. Yeah. And then she falls, and then she's suddenly Radagon.
They're the same person. Making sense.
What happens is, like, Marika is enraged by Godwin's death and then shatters the Elden Ring. Radagon tries to save the Elden Ring and restore it, but fails. And then the whole fucking story that we go through happens, essentially, years and years later. But that's like a very fucking basic overview. Basically, Marika, it seems, is trying to stop the outer god, the greater will, from having its way over the lands between. And you may or may not enable that to happen, essentially. I'll tell you what, it's a fucking cool story.
Very cool story.
It's a little bit disjointed with my telling. I'm sorry for viewers that were just like, what the fuck is going on? But there's a lot of shit all happening at the same time.
Yeah. And mostly a lot of this is hidden through item descriptions and lore bits and pieces that you've just read as you played through the game too, right, Capo?
Yeah. So it kind of coalesced, and I did do a bit of looking online what other people kind of had thought and compared to where I thought things were going. One big thing that happens in the game is, like, there's one particular storyline with the gold mask that helps a lot with understanding roughly what's going on.
So I didn't figure that out at all. Yeah. I saw him and I didn't get the NPC to go in the right spot, and I didn't go back there. So yeah. I think you've told me about it before.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That basically sets up a lot of the stuff, especially with Radagon and Marika being the same entity. And how they're kind of two parts of the same yin and yang. And then obviously Marika is like this. Marika is the overarching character, though, essentially. She's what basically begins and ends the whole story and potentially sets the Tarnished up to, you know, fix what she wanted to change in the end. So it's fucking cool. The hard thing is, like, remembering what all the fucking characters and where they fit in, because, like, they've got very similar fucking names and, you know, they're all born of different people, but...
Yeah, all right, Cap, so now that you have played through the game and you pretty much know the story and the lore, where do you rate this in terms of comparing it to other Soulsborne games story-wise? What are your thoughts?
You know what? I think it's pretty close to Bloodborne for me now. I think,
is it really?
Yeah.
So when we touched base in the first couple of episodes, just context, you said that you thought Bloodborne was better than the storytelling you had seen in Elden Ring so far.
Yeah, I think Elden Ring does a decent job of sharing maybe a bit more of the universe with you. And I'm not surprised because they paid George R. R. Martin probably millions of dollars to help craft it. So, of course, they're going to want you to know a bit more about it. So,
yeah.
But I think... I just prefer the Bloodborne story, but I think the whole, like, the series of events in this game are very, very expertly crafted and very interesting overall. And just the way that, like, you know, Marika removes death, but then also uses it to maybe potentially break everything again, because she becomes disillusioned with, you know, these outer gods meddling on the lands between. It's kind of fucking nuts. Like, in addition to that, there's other outer gods that are potentially meddling as well. Like, there's, you know, Mo, the blood guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's suggested that he's worshipping another outer god. It's suggested that there's a god for the rot that's going on beneath the lands and stuff.
Wow.
There's all kinds of shit, dude. It's actually nuts.
So, Cap, we're pretty certain there's going to be DLC coming out for Elden Ring at some point. Do you have any early predictions around where you see the DLC going?
Absolutely. I think it's definitely going to involve Mikala, the Unalloyed. Now, Mikala is the child of Radagon and Marika, so one of the imperfect children. Both Malenia and Mikala were chosen to potentially be the next Marika, essentially.
Who was in Mo's boss room in the egg, the blood?
Probably Mikala.
Yeah.
So when you go to fight Malenia, there's this big fucking tree, right? Mm. And that Halig tree was essentially built by Mikala, because Mikala was cursed to be forever young. And so I believe the idea is that Mikala built the tree and then put himself into the tree to cure him of his forever youthfulness. And then the idea was that after a certain amount of time, he'd come out of the tree. And so Malenia was supposed to protect him from shit. Malenia then has to go and fight Radahn. And then in that time, it seems like Mo's come in, stolen Mikala from the tree, and then put him into the egg or some shit like that. Or he was already in the egg because he was kind of growing or whatever else. But there's a lot of shit.
I have seen speculation that, and just casting our minds back to Bloodborne and the way that DLC was introduced. So they kind of used like existing bits and pieces that were in the Bloodborne world, and you basically go and you start a playthrough, and then when you get to that bit, you would interact with a certain part of that world, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the DLC, and it's like, oh, fuck.
I think they integrated it really well. Yeah, there's definitely ways that they could do this, that kind of thing. Here, like, there's obviously, for example, Godwin the Golden, who is the child of Marika and Godfrey. They could do a back in time thing, because there's a boss where you literally go back in time in Elden Ring. Did you get to that boss?
Which boss was it? Which
it's the big dragon lord in the bottom of
That is that Rani's quest line. Is that the one you're talking about? Oh
no,
dude, I saw it. Oh yeah, I missed that big fucking dragon. Yeah. We gotta lie down somewhere, don't you?
You go to the very bottom of the Farrah Missoula, and then you lie in a grave, and then basically all of the the broken world around you starts to restore itself, and then you're suddenly in this thing. And dude, that dragon was an Elden Lord at one time. That like he held the rune for the area, but he led the dragons who Marika had fought a war against, essentially.
I didn't get that. I didn't find that, but I saw it somewhere on Twitter or something. Someone going, and I was like, no. So I'm gonna do. And I actually want to add my little two cents here. While we're talking about Elden Ring, Cap, is I am not satisfied with the NG plus cycle.
Yeah, it's. I think a lot of people are in the same boat, dude. I think they haven't done a. I think also it's not. It doesn't scale well. Either.
It doesn't scale well, but it's also not rewarding to do anything other than just going through the main story because there's no new trinkets or plus items. So there's no reason why you should go into a tomb you've been into last time or fight a certain boss.
Which is a shame, but I think I'm kind of looking forward to another playthrough, not for a while, I think, but probably just start from the beginning again. I don't think I'll do an NG game. It'll be interesting to see how they implement any DLC. I don't know. It'll be very interesting. I've still got my PS5 saved, so I can always go back and play it on there. But I probably will buy a PC copy eventually. And
I reckon I might do the same.
Yeah.
Do some online stuff.
Yeah, I think that'd be a bit of fun. Honestly, I loved Elden Ring. I'm sad it's over, but I'm also glad it's over, because 150 hours is no fucking joke. So
I reckon that's a pretty good lead into the OGR Twitter poll of the week, Capo.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
Absolutely. So we asked viewers at home, actually, hang on. We got a couple of things I wanted to go through really quickly before we do the thing. First thing, Grizzo, there was a data miner uncovered some deleted NPC quests in, well, a particular quest in Elden Ring. Now, I'll do a brief overview of what it is. Essentially, you were supposed to meet a guy who was like a monk, and he taught you about how to brew essentially what's alcohol. And the idea was that you would get NPCs drunk to get extra information out of them.
Wow. And that got removed.
No. Which is quite interesting. So maybe we might see a part of that come back in the next DLC, potentially. That would be pretty cool. It looks like there was non-combative sleeping animals hidden all over the world, which apparently you could pull dream mist off of to make this a liquor. But yeah, apparently you could collect dreams from things and do all this other kind of cool shit. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if that comes back.
Yeah, well, I wonder whether some of this stuff will come into NG+. I imagine
that would make so much fucking sense. Because remember at the in the Consecrated Snowfield, and you have the big lady having a sleep at the very...
Did you figure her out?
No. I kind of did. So you can take the... What you want to do is you want to use the ashes of the what's the fucking name? There's like a you get ashes for a lady who fires a bow.
I've got that.
Yeah, I think you use her there or something, and then she says, "Oh, thank you for bringing me back to my sister or some shit," and then she gives you something. I can't remember what it is, but I think you get an ancient dragon.
But I didn't figure out what to do. All right, one quick one, Cap, and I'll be curious to know whether you figured this out because I didn't. But you remember how I was telling you there's an NPC that says nothing, and then I went back to him and I gave him a suit of armor, and all of a sudden he just disappeared?
Yes, I know the one. Did you
figure that out? Where does he go from? What happens
to him? So the idea with him is he was the brother of D, the Death Hunter, or whatever his name was, and he had that cool armor where it was like holding himself. So it's his twin. And there's an allusion to him being in the game. Someone tells you, I think Rogier tells you that D has a twin, and that's his twin. I don't really know why he's in underneath the ground or anything like that, but yeah, there you go.
Does he show up somewhere else after you give him that armor set?
Not that I know of.
Yeah,
he just kind of disappears.
Bizarre to me.
Yeah,
I don't think he gives you anything or anything. So,
no. I think it might be part of the Fear quest line. Because obviously Fiat kills D in the round table. Anyways, Chris, we've got to fucking quickly wrap all this shit up because we got to get through the quick fire because we pumped a fucking big lore through in here as well, which is impressive, might I say.
Before you do that, I do want to say that this should be something we should YouTube specific content for that lore through 100%. Mark that down, Pav.
Yeah.
Fucking good one. Bang it.
I mean, in all honesty, there's definitely going to be people who do a better job of it. But I think a bit of fun just to do a bit of a fucking, here's my fucking idea of what roughly happened.
I dare say, Cap, 95% of people like myself will play through this game and not piece together all the bits and pieces of the lore.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Absolutely. Now, one final Elden Ring news thing was, have you seen all this shit going around for the Let Me Solo Her player?
I've seen the memes, but I don't understand the backstory on it.
So basically, people have been finding a summoning sign outside of, arguably the most difficult boss in the game, Millennia, who is, you know, she's this, redhead lady who has these big fucking... what are they called? Fucking katanas.
Two katanas.
And she's just insanely difficult. So this guy with a jar in his head and fully naked and just two katanas has called himself Let Me Solo Her and just puts his sign out the front of the boss room and just helps people fight Millennia and has apparently helped, you know, hundreds of people fucking defeat Millennia. And it's become a fucking... Dude, there is so much artwork. People have done 3D models of this guy. There's like comic fucking shit that people have done. Like, it's just, people are going crazy for it. It's actually hilarious.
That is sick, dude.
So if you're listening at home and you want to have a bit of a laugh, just go and type in "Let Me Solo Her Elden Ring" and go and have a look at all the shit that people have created. Like, yeah, there's quite a significant amount of
I love that stuff for the game, man. That's so cool. There's a lot of like little hidden little memes in the Souls community.
Oh, absolutely,
through stuff like that. Absolutely, for sure.
And that's how you know these communities flourish is those kinds of memes. But yeah, so there you go. Anyways, Grizzly, we did do a poll earlier on in the week.
Weekly Twitter poll, baby.
That kind of went along with the fact that old Clappo had finished my playthrough finally. I wanted to kind of get an idea of roughly how many hours people have put into the game so far. So the poll was how many hours have you put into Elden Ring so far? And let us know in the comments if you finished up or you're still planning on picking it up.
We had over 30 votes, Cap, the most we've had.
Absolutely our most so far. So going through the responses we had, so we had haven't played it, 0 to 75 hours, 75 to 150 hours, and 150 plus hours. Now if you're wondering why we have those weird archaic random breaks in hours, it's because we can only have four different things on the Twitter poll, so that was what we went with. And so we had almost 55% of people who just haven't played it. 12.9% of people who had 0 to 75 hours. 29% of people had 75 to 150 hours. And 3.2% had 150 plus hours, which I think might be just me.
Yeah. All right. So Cap, ignoring those that haven't played it, I mean, clearly it's a Souls game, but having a look at the distribution here. So people getting anywhere between 75 and 150 hours on a game.
Yeah, dude, that's nuts.
Pretty good indication that the game is good quality, mate.
Dude, like, so, I mean, if I go, right, so I paid $89 for this game and I had 150 hours, that's 60 cents an hour.
Yeah.
That is excellent value. That is about as good as value gets for a game. It's very rare that I get that kind of value out of a video game.
I was on the peak. I think I was 140 hours or something. I need to go have a look. Maybe I was less. But anyway, I was pretty close to ticking over into the next category as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't be too far off, I'd imagine. But yeah, so there you go, guys. Keep an eye out for the next OGR Twitter poll. It'll be happening on our Twitter. Just look up what are we? Fucking at OGR or some shit. I can't hear you, Pav.
We're at Ogre Show on Twitter.
At Ogre Show. That's OGR Show.
But wherever you're watching or listening to the podcast, you can go down to the description and all of our socials are laid out there. So you can.
Yeah. There you go. We have a weekly poll, maybe. Yeah, and we also discuss the comments as well. So if you want to get in that action.
Yep, absolutely. Do it. So get around it. Now, Grizzo, let's get through this quick fire and then wrap up this episode because we're getting freaking close, baby. Beautiful, now, mate. First cab off the rank, mate. Activision Blizzard's new diversity chief wants to expand diversity in the office and in games. Kristen Hines will join Activision Blizzard from April 25th and has already set her sights on increasing the number of women and non-binary employees by 50%, saying, "I'm excited to join a company that is prioritizing its commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion and making progress on the ambitious goals it has set for itself." Which is great. Absolutely.
I think it's great.
I think Blizzard needs more of this.
There's no reason why this already shouldn't be happening here. So it's good to see that it is happening. Yeah. It's something that's, and I don't know if you've seen it, I'm sure you do, but it's reasonably standardized across, obviously the gender pay gap and other bits and pieces that we seem to be slowly getting a bit better at and addressing. So I think this is...
Yeah, I mean, we've got a long way to go, but it's good to see things like this being implemented and people like Kristen... getting in there and hopefully making a change for the better. So bloody good on her. The only thing I worry about is she said increasing the numbers of women and non-binary employees by 50%. So, I mean, obviously that would be 50% extra on top of what's already in Blizzard. So, it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully they can maybe get more than 50% of what's already there and do better on top of that. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, watch this space. More cool shit happening at Blizzard with people actually being nice human beings, which is what they've been known for recently.
It's nice to see a job title such as chief of diversity, equity, and inclusion officer in something like this. You've actually got someone that's in control and making good decisions for a company based on those. So that's cool.
I mean, they need it. They really need it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, mate. Yeah. And I'm sure some of this is trying to apply a Band-Aid to a massive, big, gaping wound cap, potentially.
Absolutely, dude. Well, I mean, do you know what? I think for me, the big issue is I would argue that people have already forgotten about it. Unfortunately, when it first all happened, people were, you know, rabid dogs, like, yeah, fuck Blizzard, like, I can't believe this is happening. I mean, dude, no one gives a shit anymore, but at least it seems like that. I mean, no one's really tweeting or anything about it. We're not getting an awful lot of coverage on what's been happening with the recent stuff with what was it, the I think it was the union win that they had recently. I just think it's people, unfortunately, media sensationalizes things and then they don't really follow it up with any meaningful content following that. So, look, it's nice that someone fucking posted an article about this, and I hope that we can continue to applaud the people at Blizzard who are trying to make a difference and a good difference. So, yeah, anyways, that's the end of my rant. So, moving along, Grizzly. So Kojima, creator of Metal Gear Solid, for those at home who didn't know, clarifies that his studio isn't being acquired by Sony. Now, Grizz, what happened earlier in the week someone, I think it might have actually been Hideo Kojima, posted a tweet it was basically like PlayStation Studios, and then it had all the different titles that had come out of PlayStation Studios recently. And so a lot of the mainline games like God of War, Ghost of Tsushima, Horizon, a few third-party developers, but, you know, under the banner with an icon over the top of them all saying PlayStation Studios. Now, a lot of people got all fucking giddy and hyped and, yeah, like this is obviously... Hideo Kojima announcing that Kojima Productions has been bought by Sony, which he then went on to say, no, it hasn't. I'm sorry. What did he say? I'm sorry for the misunderstanding, but Kojima Productions has been and will continue to be an independent studio.
Did you learn that lesson, hey, Cap? I believe he might have lost a bit of, like with the whole Metal Gear Solid stuff originally. Which is obviously is that Sony exclusive? I believe there was some kind of
for the most part, I think the Metal Gear Solid games are exclusive.
Yeah, so he's made it pretty clear that he doesn't want Kojima Productions to be acquired by a large name.
Yeah, so Kojima Productions currently only have one game under their belt, and that is Death Stranding.
There you go.
That's got the Norman Reedus with the fetus. That game, Walking Simulator 2000 or whatever. But I mean, obviously, there's been some recent speculation that maybe Sony might have potentially acquired the rights to Metal Gear Solid, which Kojima doesn't own. Konami owns, and Konami turned out to be a gigantic fuckwits kind of propagation studio that just do gotcha games and gambling shit and. I just kind of gross. But yeah, so there you go. So Kojima is going to remain independent, which is fine. That's no worries with that. So that's all
good.
Moving along, Cyberpunk 2077's first expansion is apparently coming out in 2023, Grizzo. So I think people are expecting to be out a bit sooner than that. Seems like maybe...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually very surprised because, I mean, obviously the game came out, what, last year or something? And they still don't have DLC for it because they just been trying to clean up the mess they made. I would love to
see the player numbers on that game. I'd love to see the daily.
I think it would be a bit of a yikes. Absolutely, I think perhaps going to get onto that, but we'll have a bit of a look. But yeah, so they recently had a financial call, which basically outlined their plans for production in 2022. So they basically have development work happening on the next Cyberpunk expansion, development work happening on the next Witcher game based on the Unreal 5 engine, further support for Cyberpunk 2077, development work on the next gen version of the Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. So that was another thing that came out of this is that has now been delayed. They expected that the next gen copies of Witcher 3 would be out earlier, potentially end of this year, but it's probably going to be next year by the sounds of things.
Wow. So they must have done a heap of work on that game already then in
Unreal 5. Cool. That's for Witcher 3, the old game.
Oh, right.
Gotcha. Yeah, so like they're getting it ready for next gen titles, because I don't think it's on PS5 as a native title. Like it plays as if it's in PS4 mode, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yep,
so,
yep. I get you, Sam. Sorry.
They're doing that. Development work at the Molasses Flood on an unannounced project based on one of our franchises. So fucking, I don't know what that even means. That's just a jumble of words. That could mean fucking anything. So there you go.
Cat stood on his keyboard, Cat. That's what happened there.
Yeah, exactly right. Hey, get off my keyboard. launch a spin-off to Gwent, the Witcher card game, so that could be interesting.
Gwent's wicked, man.
I like Gwent. I like Gwent. Mm. I think it's on smartphones and stuff now, so you can play it on your phone, which is pretty cool. So they've also got further support for the Witcher card game Gwent, which is the current version, and also for Witcher Monster Slayer, which is their Pokemon Go-like open world Google game thing that they've got going. So that's available now already and has been for a while.
So cap 15 to 20K, mate. Cyberpunk.
That's
actually quite a lot.
It's actually not too bad. Yeah, I mean it's in the same realm as No Man's Sky at the moment. So yeah. There you go. and then they've got conceptual and research work on unannounced projects. So looks like they got a fair bit of stuff in the bank. So and they're going to need it to make up for the shitstorm that Cyberpunk 2077 was.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if I can get that up yet. All right, moving along, Grizzo. Bandai Namco appears to be remastering a 3D action game for Nintendo.
What game is it?
Well, they haven't said. All they've done is they had a job description out in the wild saying that as a visual artist for a 3D action game project on a Nintendo contract, you'll be required to perform HD remastering of the 3D background.
Okay, so we talked about how prevalent remakes are in this day and age. Do you have any sneaking suspicions what this Nintendo game may be? Chrono Trigger, go.
Dude, do you know what? That would be fucking sick. I don't really know, hey. Remastering of 3D backgrounds suggests that maybe it is a 3D title. Also, 3D action game. Fuck, dude, it could be anything. It literally could be anything.
A Nintendo 3D action game. I guess, what would you think? It'd probably be on 64 or one of those older consoles, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, well, it could be a 3DS title even. They've just removed support to the 3DS, the 3DS and Wii U or whatever stores, so you can't buy games off them soon or at the moment from now on. So maybe they're now like, oh, well, now that we don't have the store open anymore, maybe we'll just remaster those games and sell them on the Switch.
Yeah,
it could be, it could honestly, it literally could be fucking anything. This
Banjo
is saying,
Kazooie, mate. If it's Banjo Kazooie, I'll be real excited.
Well, actually, that could be maybe. I mean, a Banjo Kazooie remake. I wonder how that works in a world where Microsoft now owns the rights to Banjo Kazooie.
Yeah. Don't know.
Who fucking knows? Who fucking knows? But yeah, so there you go. We'll find out soon. Now, moving along, Grizz, Dark Souls released a RPG rulebook, which is like for tabletop RPG gaming, like Dungeons and Dragons.
Hang on, Cap. This is separate to the board game, Dark Souls board game. Correct. That was crowdfunded.
This is like a rule set, a Dungeons and Dragons rule set that is Dark Souls flavored.
Now, I saw something on Critical Role where they did a one-shot using D&D rule set. You could use your flask and stuff.
What, for Dark Souls?
It was actually an Elden Ring. It was an Elden Ring one-shot. I don't know whether they
used it. They probably made their own rules up for that, I'd say.
Maybe.
This is apparently an official role-playing guide. Right. It looks like it's been done by Steamforged Games. And it is apparently fucked. Fans criticized the book for typos, rules mistakes, and apparent oversights in adapting the video game. Just to give you an idea, the highest possible starting strength for a knight character is 15 using the brute origin, one fewer than the 16 points required to equip the knight armor for which the class is supposed to come with.
Oh my lord, okay, that's got to be a typo.
That's a bit fucking garbo.com. Who knows? So they've got a thing called dropping to zero position. When you drop to zero position, you are dead, killed, it's over, until you wake up at the bonfire a little while later. They've then got a kit in here that says, kit is a leather pouch containing bandages, salves, blah, 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 blah. The kit has 10 uses. Can expect one of the kit to stabilize the creature that has zero position without needing to make a wisdom check. So basically completely undoing like the fact that death is an idea in this game, which makes no sense even in the Dark Souls world and universe. On top of that, they've got another one, the fall control spell becomes more difficult to successfully cast at higher levels as it requires a dexterity saving throw against this character's own spell DC, which makes no fucking sense.
What?
Basically, just for some reason, you have this spell that gets harder and harder to cast. The Crystal Soul Spear Sorcery appears to use the text for the Combustion Pyromancy.
Dude, so it sounds like they lacked QA here, mate.
Good absolutely. It looks like it's really bad.
Just rushed out the door, mate. You
yeah,
know?
I'd say so. And it looks like it was done by, I guess it was done by Steamforge Games. And they're the guys who do the board games. So I'm surprised that they fucked it up so bad.
Interesting, mate.
So there you go. And moving on to our final quickfire round, Grizzo, before we finish up this podcast, is that Vicarious Visions, the guys who created the Tony Hawk remake and Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy, all that kind of shit, all those remakes, they have formally now completely merged with Blizzard.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
So we're going to see a bunch more remakes coming out from them and under the Blizzard banner? Is that what's going
to
happen?
I would say so, dude. I'm pretty sure these guys had a lot to do with the Diablo 2 remake as well, from memory.
So does this mean Microsoft just get access to this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Microsoft owns Blizzard, so... Tony Hawk 1 and 2 studio is now known as Blizzard Albany. Okay, well, maybe they're going down south, mate, near your neck of the woods, mate. Hey!
Yeah, very good.
Give us a job, will you? so there you go. Pretty interesting, but more on this later, I guess, to see what they do in the future.
I like it. Yep.
Sounds not too good. Sure if they've announced what they've been working on recently, but I would assume like they just are the remaster kings essentially. So I guess
Diablo 1, please, sir. Make Diablo 1. Do it.
Yeah, maybe they will. Man, there's all kinds of shit they could be doing, but so that's the quickfire round, Grizzo. And that rounds out the podcast, an hour, 30 minutes. So that's our usual our usual how you going. But
big Elden Ring lore through, mate. I love that. That was good.
Yeah, that was I hope it wasn't too convoluted. It's kind of hard to like really be like, this is where it all begins, this is where it all ends. It's kind of like there's a lot of shit in the middle that kind of the lines have been blurred, especially around the part where Radagon and shit comes on the scene. Just like, fuck, what is going on? But those at home, thank you so much for listening. Those in the Twitch chat, appreciate you as well. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast. If you would like to support it further, you can continue to watch us. We'd appreciate it, guys. Fucking just tell a friend about this podcast. Literally just be like, hey, check out this new podcast I've been listening to. If we can all of you guys get one person to give us a buddy listen, we might, get an extra couple of blokes in here fucking saying, hey, yeah, how you going? Go and tell your friends about us. Share the podcast around. We'd appreciate it. If you'd like to help us financially, you can jump on the Patreon train. We've got a bunch of wonderful people helping to support this podcast currently. And if you would like to join the ranks, please feel free to do so in the Patreon. That's patreon.com/OGRshow. If you'd like to, you can also follow us on all of our social medias, our Twitters, our Facebooks. Just do the same thing. Go and look up Oceanic Gaming Radio on Facebook or Twitter. Or go and check out the description below this podcast or in the stream, and you'll see all of our bits and pieces linked in there. As always, we bloody appreciate you supporting us. And Grizz, have you got anything else to say, mate?
All good from me. Would love you guys to reach out via any of our socials and talk to us. Always, always love a bit of banter. Gives us something to talk about. But that's all from me. Anything from you, Pav?
Well, not too much for me. Just if you have the capacity to join our Discord, if you check that regularly, that's going to be a great place to get updates immediately. So if you can, jump on there as well.
Absolutely.
Beautiful show, guys.
Yeah, thanks, mate. You too.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers everything. I had one more thing I wanted to say, and it's actually just left my brain. So that's fine. But look, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you. We'll see you again next week. We'll be back to our usual time of 7 p.m. AWST, recording live on Monday nights on Twitch TV. slash Oceanic Gaming Radio. Otherwise, you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms. And again, go and tell your fucking friends about us. Share this podcast with one of your mates. Just one.
It's a challenge.
You
know, do it.
That's a challenge. But we appreciate it. But yeah, we'll see you next time. Appreciate you. And yeah.
See you next time. Yep.